Welcome to the Slasher Sanitarium. I am your host, Caretaker Troy, and today we're talking about the 1982 cult classic, The Thing. This movie is directed by John Carpenter, it is written by Bill Lancaster, and stars Kurt Russell. The Thing was a box office bomb, but it has since gone on to become a cult classic. It has also spawned comic books, theme parks, a video game, as well as a 2011 prequel, which will actually be our next episode. But before we get into that, I wanted to announce that the Slasher Sanitarium now is on Patreon. So please visit patreon.com/slasherpodcast. That was kind of a dumb idea by myself there. patreon.com/slasherpodcast to support the and to also keep the Slasher Sanitarium alive. And if you wish to sponsor the Slasher Sanitarium, please head over to advertisecast.com/824. That's advertisecast.com/824. Or just head over to advertisecast.com and search for the Slasher Sanitarium. And also my other podcast, the Geek and Gamer Guild, is also on there. Speaking of advertisecast.com, the Slasher Sanitarium actually has its very first sponsorship thanks to that. And with that, I'm very excited to speak about the new book called Crone, which is a Scarlet St. James novel by Maria Mayer. It is said that those who go looking for trouble will most likely find it. Crone delivers gritty, gruesome horror fun. As the author's breakout novel, and the first of a franchise series, it is chock full of what modern horror fans are looking for, to include dark spells, ancient relics, witches, fiery demons, and a cast of diverse characters the readers will love and love to hate. Late nights and dark cemeteries, betrayal, and human sacrifice keep the storyline intense from beginning to end, with dark humor sprinkled in where appropriate. Always a favorite of mine. Scarlet St. James is not only a paranormal PI who moonlights for the local police, she is also a gifted seer. Since childhood, Scarlet has seen the face of the killer in her dreams and witnessed the victims racing through choked weeds and a maze of cemetery headstones, the hideous one right on her heels. Caught in a vice-like grip, the bloodthirsty ones hoists her boys high into the night, delivering vicious, blood-spurting chomps of two fingers and bones before hurtling them back to the ground. A gang of teens known as the Unholy Five conjured the evil in 1984. And other group back in 54, bringing down the handful of unwitting victims with them. Now, 30 years to the day, two more teens have gone missing under eerily similar circumstances. Body count is growing. Crone's dark source is not only a demon, he is the demon. And the menacing presence Scarlet has managed to evade until now. He haunts her dreams, threatens her, calls her by name. Her nightmares are becoming physically painful and lingering. One thing is for sure, he is coming for her. Caught in an unspoken love triangle with her hunky ex, Sergeant Jack Hawk, and current love interest, the delectable Dr. Stone Vargas, leading forensic biologist, Scarlet and her ad hoc team must uncover clues that lay hidden in the most unlikely of places. The police turn to Scarlet. With no real evidence to go on or persons of interest in custody, the small Michigan boat town turns to the urban legend for answers, a serial killer who would be too old, but the MO and grisly details, never made public and known only to a handful of people, are now front and center. Time is of the essence, and Scarlet has no choice but to accept her calling. She alone possesses the tools to fight the monster that is out there, waiting to kill again. Using faith and family as pillars, she is forced to face what frightened us as humans. Everything she needs to know to end the bitch is contained in the pages of the ancient demonic book and her mother's dream journal. On the last night of the pact between the witch and the demon, honored every 12,000 years, hell time, Scarlet prepares for an inevitable showdown. Standing alone in the back 40 of the old cemetery with an arsenal of spiritual weapons, her former undercover partner, Darnell Mack, sits vigil near the entrance gates. With forces working beyond human understanding, the age-old battle between good and evil commences. Crone is available on eBay, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Archway Publishing, and other websites where soft cover and ebooks can be purchased. Whether you believe in urban legends or not, one thing is certain, tapping noises in the woods and late-night walks will never be the same. For more information, please visit novelsbymariamayer.com. That's M-A-R-I-A-M-A-Y-E-R, Maria Mayer. I will be giving you a review once I receive my copy of the book, and hopefully give you a little bit more information. But please, 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 show some support for Maria. You know, this is her breakout novel, and I am incredibly excited for more to come. So with that, let's get into the episode proper. And again, talking about 1982 is the thing. This is a movie that came out 2 years before I was born and has aged better than I have. So the movie opens up with silence, which is really chilling. We get title cards for a while before the music begins to slowly increase in volume. I wouldn't really call it a tune up until John Carpenter's title card actually comes up. And then we get a little bit of a tune, but still very creepy, very, very ominous way to set the mood. Then they kind of ruin a little bit by having a really bad computerized spaceship just go flying through space. It enters Earth's atmosphere before the movie title comes into being. I don't really need the shot of the spaceship, but I get what they're going for here. You know, it's the 80s. Subtlety not quite there yet. But we do get a card saying that we're in Antarctica during the winter. I don't know why we need to know the season, because I don't think that summers in Antarctica are all that different. And the year is 1982. A majestic shot of snow-covered mountains greets us. The camera's shaky, but we see something is flying in the distance. But don't worry, it's not another crazy spaceship. This time it's a helicopter. The markings on the brown chopper are Norwegian. The helicopter is chasing this adorable puppy. A dog goes hauling ass through the snow before a dude brings out a gun and he tries to shoot the dog. Incredibly interesting way to start the movie. We really don't have any idea other than we know that at some point in time we're going to meet some aliens. But otherwise, just a great way to start off where you see this cute little dog and you're like, okay, that look at this, it's a dog. And then you're like, oh, look, there's a helicopter full of a bunch of foreign people. And then you're like, oh, why the fuck are they shooting at him? Well, strap in. So we see a sign for the U.S. Science Institute Station Number 4. And then we enter the outpost where we start seeing our ragtag group of scientists. Playing ping pong, we see a guy filling a cup of ice and pouring some alcohol in it, and we find Kurt Russell, and he's playing video chess. He is very cocky, and it seems to be winning, and then he suddenly loses. Then he destroys what seems to be the only chess master console they have, and calls the computer a cheating bitch. Don't worry, I've been there. Back to the worst shots ever, as the Norwegians are still trying to hit this dog, and cannot get anywhere near him. These two will be revealed in the prequel as Lars and Matthias. Again, we'll be covering that on the next episode. So the dog makes it to the Norwegian outpost, hops on top of one of the men out there. The Norwegians circle the camp, and Kurt Russell comes outside. The rest of the crew join him. The Norwegians begin to drop bombs on the dog, and they still are missing, left and right. So finally the Norwegians land, and they begin to chase the dog. One of the men drops a bomb backwards, and it blows him and the helicopter up. So, just completely inept guys these are. The Norwegian screams at them and starts firing at the dog, and he winds up hitting one of the Americans in the leg. I do actually have the translation of what he is saying, because he's speaking Norwegian. He says, "Get the hell out of there. That's not a dog. It's some sort of thing. It's imitating a dog. It isn't real. Get away, you idiots." So if you spoke Norwegian, saw this movie in the theater, you would instantly know something's not right here. But he keeps firing and keeps missing until he is finally shot by one of the Americans. One shot is all it takes to take this guy out when he has launched off about 40 bullets at this dog and missed every time. So we find out that George is the man who's shot in the leg, and the rest of the crew come out and try to help him. The crew try to pull out the helicopter with snow and fire extinguishers, and a man comes out to tend to the dog. So we cut to the doctor sawing up George. We finally get someone questioning what just happened, but the doc tells him it was probably just cabin fever, nothing to worry about, this kind of thing happens all the time. So not a terrible way to write it off, actually, because that actually doesn't make sense. They're out in Antarctica, in the middle of nowhere, you know, crazy shit can happen. So we get a guy with sunglasses trying to contact someone on the radio. At first I thought they called him McMurtle or something crazy like that, but I found out later it is Windows that they call him. But he can't get a hold of anyone. Radio guy gets just really, really pissy. And then we cut over to a black guy rollerblading through the halls. And he delivers a line, maybe we at war with Norway. Which then we smash cut to the Norwegian guy, who is now missing an eye, because that's how we decided to kill him. Those two scenes happen back to back, which is really weird. Then we see another guy, I think maybe a stoner. He's sitting in the corner and he says he was wondering how long it would take El Capitan to use his pea shooter. El Capitan is a great shot. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be using that gun. He took this guy out in the eye and didn't even see him blink. They start saying that 8 weeks isn't long enough to go crazy, but Black Rollerblading Guy says that Stoner Guy has been crazy since day one, and 8 weeks is just enough time to go crazy. They happen to reason that there should be 8 other Norwegian guys, because it was a crew of 10. They want to go to the Norwegian camp to see if anyone else is alive. Palmer, who is our Stoner Guy, offers to give him a lift, but instead it's going to be Kurt Russell, who we find out is named McCready. And he has to load up and head out for the Norwegians. I don't know if Palmer is another pilot, but we know that McCready is the pilot there. So maybe Palmer is just always offering to give him rides. I don't know. But it's a nice way to kind of lend it to, hey, you know, there are some kind of inside jokes here. So McCready and the Dr. Copper are going to be heading out. So at this point, I'm not sure if McCready is also a scientist or if he's just there to be a helicopter pilot. Seems like not something that you'd want to have, not a guy you'd want to have stationed out there with you if all he is just a helicopter pilot. So we get an ominous shot of the dog under the ping pong table as McCready takes off. So we get the rollerblading black guy, who find out his name is Knowles. He's in the kitchen. He is actually the cook. Superstitious by Stevie Wonder is playing. It's my personal belief that every horror movie should have Superstitious playing at least once during it. So George asks Knowles to turn down the music because he was shot today. Knowles refuses, which is kind of a dick move, and actually turns the music up a little bit. We get a slow pan through the facility that shows the dog walking into a room where someone is sitting. They turn to look, and we cut right back to McCready. So, obviously, if you're listening to this, you probably already watched this movie. If you haven't, maybe just stop it now and go back and watch it. Welcome back. And so right off the bat, we know that we have at least one person who is turned at this point going forward. I have my suspicions on who it is. It's really only one of two people, because everyone else we kind of either see get turned, or we find out that they are, or the actions that they take don't seem to line up with what these things actually are trying to do. So we go back to McCready, and we find the burned out Norwegian camp. Little peeking behind the veil here, this is actually our main setting, the American camp, after the filming was already done, after the big climax of the movie, and they're just calling it the Norwegian camp at this point. So really cool that they went to this. This is not a separate set that they've built. This is the same set that the entire movie takes place at, just burned out and destroyed, so and with a couple people added into it. Back to the movie. So McCready again calls them Swedish and is corrected by Copper again, and they start to look around. There's a bloody axe on the door, and they proceed to break into a room, and they find it is pretty overrun by ice. Everything is pretty destroyed at this point. Copper finds a blood trail, and it leads to a man who has committed suicide. This is Colin, and he managed to survive not getting turned into the thing, but decided at the end to just kill himself. Good plan. Good plan, buddy. They keep searching the facility and find a busted up video unit and Norwegian paperwork. McCready finds a giant hole in the ice, and they stumble across the monstrosity that is the half-assimilated Adam and Edvard thing monster. It's been burned to death by kerosene. Pretty fucked up looking, pretty gnarly. And at this point, I'd be questioning what the hell is happening. But they don't really seem to look too hard at the monster or even seem to be all that concerned by it, and actually bring him back to the base. So everyone is looking over the body, and they ask diabetes spokesman Dr. Blair to start an autopsy. We get a shot of the two fucked up half-combined faces before we cut to the dog watching them. Palmer wakes up Windows, the radio guy, and tells him to keep trying someone. Cooper says nothing is... Copper. He should have just been Cooper. Calling him Copper is a weird thing, and I kept typing it wrong in my notes, too. Copper says nothing is wrong with the Norwegian they killed, other than, you know, him being dead. Blair winds up finding normal organs in the Edvard thing. Reminder, at least one person in this base is a thing at this point. And one of them, I'll just go ahead and say it now. To me, at this point, either Palmer or Norris have been turned. We haven't seen Norris yet. And Palmer, I think, is probably the suspect at this point. Him going and getting Windows and telling him to keep trying someone, that's fine. That, to me, just says the thing wants more people to come so it can spread itself a little bit more. So we just don't know who else it is, if both of them are at this point, or if it's just one, which is what really makes this movie great, because we really don't know. It's one of those things where these guys don't know, the audience doesn't know, and we never really have anyone up until the end where we're like, okay, that's one of them, get away from him. All the rest of this is any one of these guys could be infected, or all of them could be infected. We don't know, and we know as much as the people in the movie know. So, guy that I didn't see before, he seems to be smoking a joint with Childs. Everyone else is playing pool of cards, and then the dog spooks George, and he asks Clark to take the dog away. So Clark takes the dog into the dog cage. Clark is apparently the dog trainer. It seems to be his only job at this point either. I haven't really seen anyone do any science other than doctors, but we're still at a scientific outpost, so. So Clark takes the dog to the dog cage, and the rest of the dogs seem to know something is up. And as soon as Clark leaves the room, the dog thing goes fucking crazy. It starts to shake, and its face opens up. The dog thing begins to lash out with tentacles. It grows a shit ton of legs. And at this point, the puppet work on this movie is amazing. The animatronics, the puppetry, the special effects are just phenomenal. This is really how I wish more movies like this were made, because there's really no dip in quality on this. I mean, the stuff that occurs in this movie, you feel like it's real. You know, you don't really, unless you're really taking yourself out of it, you get into this movie, it's crazy scary. So things start to spray shit on the dogs, and at this point Clark comes back in because all the dogs are barking. So he stupidly opens the door to the dog cage and lets out a possibly normal dog. Maybe one of the things, I don't know, I'm going to guess it's probably just a normal at this point. That's when those dogs run out before he's able to close the door. We cut over to MacReady, and he's getting something to drink when he hears something, and then he instantly pulls the fire alarm. So Childs is told to grab the flamethrower, and MacReady, shotgun in hand, rounds the corner to see the dog thing is now a mess of limbs, and is just crazy looking. Starting to turn the other dogs, wrapping them around. MacReady just starts blasting the thing, and anyone with a weapon begins to open fire as well. This is how smart these guys are. They see this shit, they don't sit there and go, oh, I wonder what's going on. They just open fire. But Clark gets upset because he sees one of the normal dogs get shot. The thing already had it. It was wrapped around its neck. There was no way, and there was no way to tell if the dog wasn't already infected at that point anyways. So, at that point, Childs arrives with the flamethrower as the dog thing tries to escape through the roof, but he opens fire on the thing, literally, just as it sprouts a flower-like appendage and starts to, and just lights it up. So everyone kind of looks around. We have a nice little moment where everyone just doesn't know what to say because they just saw something crazy. But it also looks like Blair is another thing to autopsy, so... Blair makes a bunch of great noises while he digs around inside the thing, and he informs them that we're dealing with something that imitates other creatures perfectly. He's able to pretty quickly freak everyone out by informing them of this, and it's good. It shows how intelligent they are. There's no, oh, we don't know what this thing could be. Oh, maybe we're seeing things. No, it's like, look, we're dealing with something crazy here. No need to beat around the bush on this. We have some problems. So they take blood from the last remaining dog, and Clark seems to already be gone at this point, but he's kind of a red herring at this point. But he the way he is acting is, you know, could he be one of them? You know, Blair seems to think he is. Clark also seems kind of nervous about Blair. It's a great tension building scene, and it's another one of those scenes where it's just building up the isolation that these guys are going for, you know, going through, and the tension that's going to be where you don't know if the person across from you is a crazy alien or not. So they're watching the Norwegian videos to try to figure out what's going on. They wind up seeing the spaceship buried in ice, and we see them, you know, blasting through and everything like that. And at that point, MacReady decides he's going to go visit the spaceship. So he takes Norris, and I think he takes Childs with him. The guy that's with him is covered up completely, which makes sense because they're in Antarctica, but I can't tell who else it is. It could be Childs, it could be anybody at this point. But it doesn't really matter because it's not really important to the plot. So Kurt Russell has an amazing cowboy hat on as they stand at the top of the mountain range overlooking the crashed spaceship. Norris, who seems to be the only scientist at the base, thinks the spacecraft has been there for at least 1,000 years. Just by looking at the ice, he knows, which makes sense because he is actually a scientist. Like I said, at this point, Norris also could very well be infected. But given the fact that he's giving information like this, I would say maybe he's less likely. I would say right now it's just Palmer. But you also see a giant block of ice that they wind up carving out. So we know that when the spaceship crashed, whatever alien creature was in there got ejected from it or crawled out of it and froze in the ice there. And they carved him out of there and took him. And then he escaped from the ice. But we'll find that out in the prequel anyways. So Niles asks, who is throwing their dirty drawers in the kitchen garbage? And I don't know why he just assumes this when the outfit that he gives them is all torn to shreds. And considering everything else that's going on, you think he'd be a little bit concerned about that. The outfit, though, this is one of those things, too, where we don't see anyone wear this outfit earlier in the movie, and we know that, but I mean, the shadow guy, maybe that's their outfit that they wear when they sleep. It's a little bit of a cheat, but it works for me. So we see that Blair is already starting to kind of withdraw from the rest of the group, and he runs a simulation that shows the infection infecting other cells and assimilating them. It's not really necessary to the movie because we just kind of already explained that, but Blair starts making calculations and he finds that there's a 75% chance that one of the crew members is already infected, and that in 27,000 hours the entire world would be assimilated if it reaches a populated city. So MacReady is playing with the torn shirt that Niles tossed to him, but he just can't seem to understand what it means. He knows that it's something important, but he can't put it together yet. So we get a guy whose name is Fuchs, which that's a real dangerous name when you're trying to spell it out. But he wants to talk to MacReady, and Windows wants to burn the corpses. I can't agree more with you, buddy. But George tells him that they can't because it will earn someone a Nobel Prize. So we see that the body is leaking blood, and we know that they are... I don't remember if it's at this point that we know that they're... I think we know already that the bodies are still somewhat alive, even though they're burned. And Windows runs off, leaves George alone. Which, again, at this point, why are you leaving people alone? So Fuchs says that Blair has locked himself in his room, and he was reading Blair's journal. Kind of a dick move, but whatever. So MacReady finally listens to him, and hears that there is still life in the bodies. This is where we find out about that. So Windows comes back and he finds George's bloody remains as he is being assimilated. Windows runs out, grabs Fuchs and MacReady, and we see George running outside of the compound. He falls to the ground as everyone surrounds him. And at this point we see that George is almost fully formed, but he's got these fucked up hands, and he starts to scream inhumanly at the group. George is then lit on fire, And this is the first time that we get a confirmed timeline of when someone gets assimilated. So we know George was grabbed, assimilated, and then he was taken care of. So, but again, we know still one more person out there, probably Palmer. So Gary is distraught, and, you know, for all right. But McCready says that they need to burn the rest of the bodies. Everything gets piled up and is burned, and we, the audience, knows, again, at least one person is already assimilated, possibly others as well, but we get, you know, we, the audience, are supposed to think that it's Clark because of the way that he's, you know, he's been interacting. Gary realizes that Blair is missing, and there's a little bit of, like, all right, is Blair one of them? But then we're going to get that, you know, him running the tests is a normal thing for him to do and doesn't make a lot of sense if he would already know what he is. But so McCready sees Blair doing something to the helicopter. And again, you're like, okay, well, we see that Blair damaged the equipment. And that would only make sense if Blair is human, because the thing would not be doing that. It wants to... You know, Blair's trying to contain the alien at this point. So he's cutting off all outside interaction, making sure that, you know, nothing's going to come and try to save him or anything of that. It's not something that the thing would want to do. So we know at this point that Blair is human, and he's pretty sound in what he's doing. He's just going about it the wrong way. But McCready hears a gunshot, and he runs inside, and Blair has a gun, and he's going a little nuts. So he has gone into the radio room, appears to have hit Windows at some point, because Windows is all bloody, and he's starting to destroy the radio equipment. Childs returns to say that the tractor and the helicopter are destroyed, and that the rest of the dogs were killed, or dog at this point, because there's only one left. Clark runs off to confirm it. Norris returns with a folding table, and Childs starts to talk to Blair, but he gets instantly shot at. McCready rushes Blair, and it takes three guys and comical punch noises to take down a 50-year-old guy who probably has diabetes, because it's Wilford Brimley. Cut over to Clark, standing over a dog, and we see that it's an axe in its neck. So they take Blair over to the tool shed and lock him inside. McCready talks to Blair about trust, and McCready tells him to trust in the Lord for some reason. It's the first and only time that they really get kind of religious on it, and I don't know if it's just McCready being a dick to him or what, but... Blair tells him to watch Clark, and Blair's actions, again, put him firmly in the territory of a real person. So we are left at this point, since George is dead, Blair is tied up. We're left with Copper, Childs, Windows, Knowles, Gary, Palmer, Clark, Norris, and Fuchs, as all people who could potentially be infected, but really only Palmer and Norris at this point are your people that you can suspect being infected. But we know that Blair is a human. We know that McCready is human, at least unless you look at, some people seem to think that McCready was all along, but I don't believe it at all. So Copper wants to figure out a blood test, and he heads off to the lab. McCready is smart enough to know that Blair is human at this point, tells everyone else to watch Clark. So we see that all the blood bags have been cut, and everyone looks at Copper and Gary as possible people who broke into the blood bank. Gary is trying to defend himself when everything breaks down into a fight. So this point here, again, you know, it's in hindsight at this point, but this scene doesn't exactly make sense, because they have a whole fight about who could get into this, and they say that only Copper and Gary had access to it, but both of these guys are human. And so it's one of those things, okay, well, who did break into it? Did somebody really swipe the key off of Gary? Or, I don't know. It seems like kind of a cheat. But anyways, back to the movie. So Windows goes running because he knows that either Gary or Cooper is infected. Copper did it again. Hard to blame Windows for this reaction, because it's pretty good evidence to support that Gary is infected. But Gary puts down his gun, and he wants to give over leadership to Norris. Bad idea. But McCready takes the gun before Childs can, and because apparently Childs is a hothead, because MacReady says he needs someone a little bit more even-tempered. So then we see the blood bags being burned outside. MacReady says, "I know I'm human, and if I were all, and if you were all those things, sorry, I know I'm human, and if you were all those things, these things, you'd attack me right now. So some of you are human," which is really sound reasoning. So MacReady moves Copper, Gary, and Clark away from everyone else, because these are your kind of key suspects. He wants Fuchs to drug them and tie them up and work on a new test. So we see Norris is injecting them with a sedative as MacReady is making a recording. MacReady talks about everyone being tired and not trusting anyone, then rewinds the tape and records over it. Which was strange, but, you know, I guess maybe if he figures that they're going to get out of this alive, he doesn't want it to be as negative as it could be. I don't know, but it's a nice touch. As MacReady enters, Fuchs grabs a bottle of acid just in case, which is cool, but it also kind of shows you that, okay, Fuchs is human, because otherwise the whole point of, you know, the thing is to assimilate these humans and to try to not arouse suspicion. Something runs in front of Fuchs, and he rushes outside to follow it. So he winds up finding MacReady's shirt all torn up in the snow. So again, you know, okay, well, is MacReady one of them? We as the audience don't know. Palmer does not want to go with Windows to check the facility. So Norris is left alone with the three that are tied up, which is a really not a good idea. Because we already know at this point what happened with George. Why would you leave three people that are tied up who can't defend themselves with one person? You think you would put two people on him, unless you're really unlucky. At least one of them is going to be human, and then the thing is not going to try to attack four people when one of them can easily withstand them. So MacReady asks Blair if he's seen Fuchs. Blair has a noose hanging next to him, which is really dark, but I love it. Blair says he wants to come back inside, and at this point you can't really be sure if it's still Blair or not. I think it is, but the way he's talking, you know, as soon as they locked him out there and everyone walked away, you might as well have just killed him on the spot, because you have no idea if he's going to be human or not. So MacReady goes walking, finds a burned body, finds Fuchs's glasses. So this is another one of those ones where you're trying to think of what actually happened. So Fuchs wound up seeing MacReady's shirt, and then the next time we see him, he's burned up. So either he killed himself, or somebody thought maybe he was, and he was killed by another human. I don't know. There's also the possibility that Childs, at this point, is one of the things, and he went out there and killed Fuchs instead of assimilating him. Maybe they had a struggle or something like that. But I guess the only one that really makes sense is that Fuchs killed himself. But if he did, where did MacReady's shirt go? Why didn't he say something to anyone first? It seems kind of strange. But so MacReady stands up and says that they're going to head to his shack. And, you know, they ask him why, and he says, because when I left there, this morning I turned the light off, and we see there's light inside a shack. So, I don't know if we're supposed to think that MacReady is one of them or not, but sure, we'll go with it. And so maybe we're supposed to think that our hero is one of them, and we're rooting for a bad guy. So Norris is having some issues while he is boarding up the doors. Everyone else is boarding up everything as well. But Norris yells for everyone to come to the door because he sees that Knowles is back. So Knowles has actually found the torn up shirt in MacReady's room. So I don't know what it was doing out in the snow, but now it's back in MacReady's room. So whoever put it out there, I guess, grabbed it after the fact. Maybe they killed Fuchs. I don't know. But everyone is arguing when the door handle starts to turn. Palmer wants to burn MacReady, and because they said that nobody could have made it out there without a line, we hear that MacReady breaks a window in another room. Childs wants to break into the storeroom, but he finds MacReady with a bunch of dynamite in his hands. So Norris and Knowles try to grab MacReady, throws both of them off, and Norris falls into the wall, and we see that he starts to have a heart attack. So They wheel Norris into another room, and Copper begins to do chest compressions, and we are about to see one of the greatest scenes ever. So MacReady is still pissed. Copper keeps doing chest compressions, and then Norris's stomach collapses in on itself, opens up. Copper's hands go into it. The stomach closes, and it bites his arms clear off. And it is amazing. I can't believe that they were able to pull this scene off. It still freaks me out. It's a freaky freaking scene. And it's just one of those scenes that stays with you. And everything about it is just great. How out of the blue it happens. And it's great. So they come running back in. Norris's stomach starts exploding. Another Norris head erupts from his stomach, winds up hitting the ceiling. So MacReady lights the body on fire, but his original head detaches from his body and hits the ground. So again, Norris was a potential person that was infected by the dog to begin with, but I think it was more along the lines of the fact that at some point in time, he must have came in contact with Palmer, or Palmer came in contact with him. Either way, so we know for sure Norris was one of them. And we also, at this point, think that, okay, maybe he's the only one, but then the movie will be over. So the Norris head comes out from under a desk and is shown running away behind MacReady, which is kind of an unintentionally funny scene because they're all facing one way. You just see this head on these little spider legs just trying to run away. So they turn to see it happening, and Palmer gives a line in the movie, "You gotta be fucking kidding me." So they torch Norris's head, and MacReady wants everyone to be tied down. So again, at this point, you know, Palmer delivers a line, this line, which is really good, but what's about to happen is just like, yeah, okay. Because now we go straight from that scene into no cuts at all, so no chance that anybody between Norris going crazy and this scene getting infected at all. So MacReady wants to get everyone tied up. Clark says he wants to do what MacReady says, but Childs refuses to be tied up. Clark tries to stab MacReady. MacReady turns and shoots him in the head. So the fact that he doesn't really react at all, because it seems to be the only way you can kill these things is by torching them. We know that Clark is human, and we're about to get some confirmation of the two. So the guy who everyone thought that was infected was human, so we're pretty solid it's a red herring at this point. And again, he would have been fine if he just wouldn't have tried to kill MacReady. But again, we're playing on the paranoia thing, playing on people's actions because of the paranoia. So MacReady gives a great speech, talking about that every part of the creature is a separate part and will try to defend itself. He knows this because of the fact that the head detached itself from the body, ran away. So he knows that every little bit of this creature is kind of a hive mind. So MacReady has Windows tie everyone up, and they draw blood into a petri dish. Obviously, this is the iconic scene of the movie. It's really smart, too. So MacReady heats up some wire and stabs into the dish labeled Windows. Nothing happens, so we know Windows is fine. MacReady says, "Now I will show you what I already know." Does it to himself and shows that he is human. He does Copper, who we see is also human. And then he does Clark, also human. So Childs calls MacReady a murderer, which is true. So then he stabs into Palmer, and the blood jumps out of the dish. Palmer starts to shake violently. His face starts to bleed, and he starts to melt. He starts to flail around, and then he jumps up onto the ceiling. Palmer then grabs Windows and bites him on either side of the head with the sides of his head. And he starts to combine with Windows before he chucks him over to the wall. So MacReady finally gets his flamethrower to light, lights Palmer on fire. Palmer runs outside before MacReady chucks a stick of dynamite onto his body and blows him up. We see the Windows is starting to stir in the corner, but then MacReady torches him as well. So, really crazy scene. The reactions of Gary and Childs are great, where they realize that they're tied to this thing. So after that, cut over, we see that Knowles is cleared, as is Childs. Childs says that he wants to be cut loose because he knows that the only other person that they have to test is Gary, who's tied with him. So then they do the test of Gary, and Gary is also human. So again, you know, going back to that scene where they were saying that Gary and Copper were the only two people that had access to the blood banks, we just found out that both of them are human. And we know now that only two people were actually infected this entire time. So, you know, we still don't know about Blair outside. Probably a good chance he's gone. So then everyone leaves except for Childs. And again, this is just really stupid. You finally find out that everyone is alive. Don't leave one guy by himself, because you're just asking for that guy to get assimilated. But they go outside to try to do the blood test to Blair. We see that Blair is already gone, though. So at this point now, we're pretty sure he's one of them. He's escaped through a hole in the bottom of the tool shed. They go down and they see that he's actually building a spaceship. So, again, good job letting him get assimilated. Childs is now running around outside, and the power cuts out to the camp. So MacReady blows up the Blair makeshift spaceship, which is a hard phrase to say. Knowles crashes a snowcat into the wall, and they begin to systematically destroy the base. So, again, you know, this is they firebomb everything, throw Molotov cocktails, throw everything out. And they're actually doing this. They're actually burning this place down, which, like I said, back at the beginning of the movie, you see the end result of that. So they wind up heading under the base, and there's a funny scene where Gary says the generator's gone, and MacReady says, can you fix it? And he's like, no, the generator's gone. Like, it's gone. So MacReady wants them to plant explosives around the entire base to bring it down. So Gary starts having problems with his flashlight before he's attacked by Blair, and Blair assimilates him. So MacReady calls out to Knowles, but he finds that everything is quiet. So we're left to... Knowles is kind of left ambiguous if he dies or not, because we don't see him the rest of the movie. So he's alive and hiding somewhere, or more than likely he was assimilated as well. I know that there was a deleted scene, actually, of Knowles suffering a pretty violent death, which they wound up cutting from the movie. So at least the original plan was to have him be killed as well. So MacReady lights a stick of dynamite as suddenly something comes rushing to him underneath the snow. And we get the Blair creature, which emerges from the ground, which is a giant creature with kind of a fucked up looking dog head to it, and another dog head coming out the front of its chest. So despite the fact that this is Blair and Gary, there's also dog left in it too. So maybe one of the dogs was under there, or it just remembered that. It liked the way it was when it was a dog. I'm not sure. So MacReady throws a stick of dynamite of it, and it blows everything up. Which I guess also would include Knowles if he is alive. But yeah, everything blows up really quickly. It was really kind of a quick scene. We just get this kind of, you know, crazy creature come out, and then they're just like, okay, well, I guess we're done with that. We're just going to blow it up. So at this point, we're like, okay, well, we didn't see what happened to Knowles, but he's probably dead. We didn't see what happened to Childs. Who knows where he is? We know that everyone else is dead except for MacReady. So MacReady sits down in the snow, and all of a sudden Childs comes up behind him, and he's holding a flamethrower. MacReady asks where Childs was. Childs says he thought he saw Blair, and that he chased after him. Childs also says that the fire has caused the temperatures around the camp to go up, but he knows it won't last long, but it gives them at least a little bit more time to maybe survive. So MacReady and Childs, they both seem to be resigned to die out in the snow. MacReady hands Childs a bottle of alcohol out of nowhere. I'm not sure where it came from. And the movie ends with a shot of the camp fully in flames. So we get this very ambiguous ending. And anytime you have an ambiguous ending, you're going to have lots of speculation. You're gonna, you know, this in a movie that we already had some aspects of. Is this person the thing? Is this person infected? Is this person human? You know, having an ambiguous ending like this, you're gonna have a lot of different theories on it. And I love fan theories, and I'm gonna give a couple of them to you here. So people have asked John Carpenter, and he's not really giving an answer, but he has said, perhaps jokingly, that final scene, MacReady is alive, but he didn't see Child's breathing. But if you're watching this, you do see his breath. His chest might not be panting as much as MacReady's is, but you can definitely see his breath, so this is most likely just a joke. In the video game, which is a sequel to The Thing in a way, the video game actually reveals that MacReady survived, but Childs froze to death. John Carpenter has actually said that the video game is canon, but again, I'm not sure if, you know, this is in fact true or not. One of the biggest theories out there is that the bottle of alcohol that MacReady gives Childs is actually one of the Molotov cocktails that he had, and that Childs is actually drinking kerosene, which would mean that he is infected. I guess it would kind of be supported because MacReady, once he hands it to him, he kind of lays his head down and seems very disappointed. You could just take that as, well, he's kind of resigned that he's going to die out there. But you could also take it as, okay, I'm the last human alive. When I watched the movie, I just kind of assumed that both of them died out in the snow and that, you know, we were done. That, the alien was dead. They do still kind of leave it open that maybe it wasn't the only alien that's on that spaceship out there, because the big spaceship's still out there as well, which I was kind of surprised that they never really did any kind of sequel to this, but probably for the better. And obviously, you know, the scene where Childs is left alone and running around leaves everything open to a lot of serious speculation. So, but I would love to hear what you have to think about the ending of the movie or just the movie itself. You know, go ahead and drop me a line at @SlasherPodcast on Twitter, or email me theslashersanitarium@gmail.com. Be sure to check out questendnetwork.com. I'll be putting up this episode here. If you are listening to this through a podcast app or iTunes, you know, please subscribe to get the episodes as soon as they come out. And also, you know, tell some of your friends. But with that, I'm going to be drawn to a close here. And make sure to keep looking at questendnetwork.com or keep checking your feed, because I will be doing the prequel 2011 film, also called The Thing. I feel like you could add a better name for it. Very soon, hopefully within the next 2 weeks. With that, thanks for listening.